It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A new study says the number of seniors filing for bankruptcy is way up. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. So much for the golden years. Elders going bankrupt at a much higher rate than they used to. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, who says?
Well, the study is from the Consumer Bankruptcy Project. Researchers from the project have been collecting data on the age of bankruptcy filers since the early 1990s. They found the rate at which Americans over 65 file for bankruptcy has more than doubled, and the median amount of debt they owe has also more than doubled since 2001.
What do older Americans say is causing this financial distress?
Well, the researchers sent questionnaires to the older debtors, and they said the main reasons for bankruptcy were medical problems, credit card interest rates. Some seniors also said they filed for bankruptcy because of aggressive debt collectors.
And is this overall because the baby boomers are now aging?
The researchers say it's more than that. They say some of the seniors who filed for bankruptcy co-signed loans for their kids. The study also says Medicare is now requiring seniors to pay a bigger chunk of their medical expenses. There are also gaps in Medicare coverage. Premiums are high. And the study says medical expenses were a catalyst for bankruptcy for more than 6 out of 10 of the questionnaire respondents.
And there must be so many consequences given this trend.
Right. I mean, the questionnaire asked the seniors the single most important thing they were unable to afford in the year before they filed for bankruptcy. Over half said they had to forego something related to medical care.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer in Washington. Thank you. And we're tracking a currency story. When the comparative value of a country's money goes down, its goods get easier to sell in a foreign land. And we're watching China's currency as the trade confrontation escalates. On Mondays, we consult economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives in New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just looking at my screen, the dollar is up to the Chinese currency, the yuan or RMB, a dollar by 6.84.8. That's just at the moment, but that's part of a trend.
A very pronounced trend. The Chinese currency has been weakening sharply, about 7% since mid-June, which is quite a depreciation. It's a big deal.
Well, it's significant, right? Because if this makes Chinese products easier to sell in the U.S., that's pulling the other way from certain tariffs that certain U.S. country is applying.
Yes, there is talk that this is a stealth way for the Chinese to fight the trade war. So they have some control over their currency, and it's not perfectly market-driven, and they are allowing it to devalue. So that does offset some of the impact of the impending tariffs.
For their part, Chinese officials say they have no desire to manipulate their currency. Julia Coronado, Macro Policy Perspectives, always good to talk to you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
The CEO of Pepsi, Indra Nooyi, is stepping down after 12 years. That leaves just 5% of companies on the Fortune 500 with female bosses. Nooyi's replacement, Ramon LaGuarta, will have to keep wrestling with consumers' shifts to healthier beverages. Pepsi's stock is up 0.8%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The Trump administration is considering a nice bouquet of flowers for the investment class. The administration might let people factor in inflation when calculating the tax on capital gains, the tax when you sell an investment that went up. It's a kind of tax cut that maybe doesn't need approval from Congress. Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan came in. Alan, you ready to help us understand this?
Absolutely.
All right. So you bought something for $100 years ago, it's now worth $500. Capital gains tax applies to the difference, $400. What's this about inflation now, maybe?
Well, let's say in the years since you bought it, there was 30% inflation. So what this would do would be to say, well, to calculate the tax, we don't start with 100, we start with 130.
All right. So the capital gains tax rate, whatever it is, would apply to a little bit less money. That's going to save somebody money.
Right. And the people who would save almost all the money are the top 1% of the people in the country, who unfortunately don't include me.
But a lot of the criticism of the idea has been focused on this, as this perk for the richest Americans. But you have another beef with it, really, don't you, Alan?
Yeah, because capital gains rates now are much lower than the rates on regular income. The top rate on regular income is about 38.5%. The top rate on capital gains is 23.8%. That's a 40% difference. So capital gains already get a big break.
So you're saying the tax break's already essentially in there?
Well, yeah.
So if the idea of factoring in inflation will mean people have more money to invest productively into the economy, if they're going to do that, they're already going to do that.
Well, yeah. And if you believe that this is going to make any real difference, I've got a tooth fairy who will make you an investment proposal.
All right. Now, you did some calculations of the Alan Sloan personal portfolio. If this change were enacted, you might save some money, but you still don't like it?
Well, no, because I'm already saving a batch of money. How much more money should I be saving? As we used to say in Brooklyn, enough already.
Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Now, last week, my Marketplace colleague Kai Ryssdal was talking to Larry Kudlow, the U.S. financial analyst and TV host who's now director of the Trump administration's National Economic Council. Kudlow was saying he's watching to see if tariffs do anything to the U.S. economy.
But I will say, so far, the pain has been de minimis, really very little.
Well, look, sir, something. Really, with all respect, that's easy for you to say, sitting here on the second floor of the West Wing of the White House.
Now, don't class warfare me or anything like that. I'm telling you, quantitatively, we follow this very closely because we are concerned about it. There is very little impact, almost unmeasurable impact, on real GDP. Okay? That's a fact.
That interview from last Friday is at Marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.